Given that I have a background with carpentry and the building trades, I offered ideas for building the little platform. Ash was coming up with crazy, complicated design plans, but I saw them not only as unnecessary, but counterproductive. Dude, you're not going to be holding that much weight with this little thing. All you really need is 2 2x4 cross braces that are nailed to a couple 2x4s on either end. Put 2 legs on the side near the hatch and attach the other side to the platform on the back of the seats. Then cut a piece of 3/8-inch plywood to fit over it, and voila, you have a shelf. I'm thinking we need 2 more legs in the middle and then at least 3 braces across. I'm telling you, you're thinking too much into this. It's like a 4-foot span. You don't need much support. How about we just ask one of the employees to draw us up a plan, Ash decided. I just sat back and kept quiet at that point. Something I've learned doing building work, handyman work, or anything like that, employees in hardware stores have no goddamn idea what they're talking about a lot of the time. Think about it. Why are they working there, making $10 an hour and not in the trades themselves? There are, of course, exceptions to that rule, and sometimes employees have been very helpful to me. But when a 17-year-old kid walks up and asks me, "Is there a project I can help you with, sir?" it seems like a joke. The guy that Ash asked for help just so happened to be one of the aforementioned exceptions. He drew up some great plans for the sleeping shelf. I can't stress enough how perfect I thought these blueprints were. I couldn't have done a better job if I tried. Or, wait, I did actually, because he drew up plans for the same exact design idea that I had offered to Ash only moments earlier. Exactly the same. "Ah, see, that will work perfectly," Ash commented. I sighed. Whatever. The employee cut all of the wood for us, which was corporate policy, probably to keep business-type weekend do-it-yourselfers from hacking their thumbs off in an attempt to prove to their wives that they could easily put together that porch swing. We started arranging the pieces as they were to be nailed together, just to make sure everything fit. Ash started second-guessing the design again and rearranging the pieces in different ways. He kept moving them around, removing them, and then moving them again. I kept insisting that the design was fine, we just needed to start nailing stuff together. He was trying to figure out which pieces to nail together first. This piece and then that piece, or vice versa. This entire process took an exorbitant amount of time. 3 cups of shitty free coffee's worth. Finally, I became fed up and grabbed the hammer and nails. I started slapping the pieces together as he attempted to stop me. "Well, hold on, I'm not sure if we should put that piece on before this other piece." "Nope, it's fine." Smack, smack, smack. I ignored him and just started nailing the boards where they needed to go. After a couple of them, I think he finally realized that everything was going to be fine, so he started driving nails as well. I've done the same overthinking on projects more times than I can count. It's easier to recognize the telltale signs when you're sitting even just slightly outside of the creative bubble. 4 hours or so later, if you can believe that, we had a shelf that Ash and Sarah could lay upon after folding the rear seats down. Finally, we were back on the road. But, unfortunately, not for long. Since we had wasted almost an entire day doing that, we made it only about 45 minutes farther south before we had to start searching for a campsite near the road. We found a huge national park-type area, which we figured we could easily drive into and find a place to camp. Upon entering the inner trails of the park, however, we started noticing signs that said danger, poison, and please keep all pets leashed to avoid accidental death. "Well, that can't be good," I noted. "I thought this was just a fucking park or something. How can they just dump a bunch of poison in a public park?" No one had an answer for that. We circled around the area for a while, looking to find a spot that wasn't going to silently poison us in our sleep. At one point, we came across a guy riding a dirt bike on one of the trails. "Hey, man," Ashley called as he pulled up next to him. "Do you know if we're allowed to camp here?" "Ah, no worries." The guy had the thickest backwoods Australian accent I've ever heard. "You just find a spot wherever you want, eh? And if a ranger comes and gives you a proper bother, just tell him bugger off and wait a tick or two, then come back."
"Oh, okay, cool. But what about all these signs about poison?"
Ah, fuck, it's 1080 poison, yeah. They're trying to bait and kill all the foxes running crazy through here. Just wash your hands before you eat and you'll be right off, eh? That was enough information for us, so we drove around for a few more minutes before finding a spot and calling it home for the night. Aaron and I pitched our hammocks while Ashley and Sarah tried out their new truck digs. I stayed surprisingly warm given how cold it had been getting at night. The new sleeping bag was deemed a worthy purchase. The next day, we continued driving down the coast, finally making some real headway. We ended up at Cape Lewin, the furthest southwestern point in Australia. From there, you could stand and see the Indian Ocean and Southern Antarctic Ocean collide. It was quite a sight to behold. Conflicting currents of the two huge bodies of water caused a tent-like line of waves extending away from the peninsula. Beyond our watch point stood a beautifully picturesque white lighthouse, which we avoided entering due to the usual reasons. We heard it cost money. We spent almost an hour there watching the oceans and taking pictures. Aaron mostly kept his distance from me and I from him as tensions continued to mount. Every word he spoke caused an irritated tick within me that I labored to keep contained. On a very much related note, we had made it a few days without so much as a puff on a cigarette after we'd finished the last of the pack we'd bought in Perth. After leaving the lighthouse, we aimed the GPS, or sat-nav as it was referred to by Ash and Sarah, towards a national park nearby. Having traveled over 300 kilometers from Perth to the Cape, we were now headed east towards a town called Esperance. Near there was Cape Le Grand National Park, which was rumored to feature a beach where kangaroos hung out. We still had yet to see a live one. The drive to Esperance was to be spread out over a few days with several stops scheduled in between. The first stop was in another park. In an attempt to save money, we opted to try something new. Most of these sites required campers to fill out a card, post it on a stake outside of their campsite, and pay in the morning when the ranger came around, or drop it in a box. As much as I'd love to be an honest contributor to the Australian National Park System, I was not a man of means. Thus, nefarious methods were adopted to skirt financial burden whenever possible. We simply took the card, set it out on the post, and hoped we would leave before a ranger came around. We all slept in a large tent that had come free with the Jeep when Ash and Sarah had bought it. In the morning, we hastily packed everything up and looked around. With no ranger in sight, we hopped in the vehicle and took off. No one ever said anything, and we saved our $20 or $30 for other causes. That afternoon, Ashley and Sarah went to check out this skywalk thing through the tree canopy in yet another national park. Aaron and I couldn't afford it, obviously, so we opted to just wait in the Jeep for them. We figured we could use that time to calculate our current finances. Despite the scrimping and saving, money was becoming an issue once again. I had certainly not accounted for the gas and food needed for a road trip when I was budgeting the rest of the trip back in Malaysia. Gas was rapidly eating away at our already meager coffers. Things were looking grim. I had budgeted a minimum of $650 to make it through New Zealand. This included plane tickets from Auckland to Christchurch on the South Island. My graphic design client, Abby, had basically said the North Island was a waste of time. I had calculated expenses down to the last apple and jar of peanut butter. $650 did not include hostel or hotel stays other than one night upon our arrival in Auckland to recuperate after our flight from Oz. The main problem with that figure is that by this point in our little cruise across Oz, we only had about $600 left total. So not only were we $50 short of our New Zealand budget, but we still had another 2 weeks or so in Oz to cover gas and food, not to mention $120 for train tickets from Kalgoorlie to Perth after our intended visit with Ryan. I calculated that we needed at least another $500 on top of our current $600 to make it through the trip without starving to death or being stranded somewhere. I desperately hoped some graphic design work would be waiting for me when we'd get to Kalgoorlie. On top of these woes, there was still the lingering question of our return to the U.S. How are we getting home to Ohio from Los Angeles? We were both pretty floored upon realizing the true scope of our predicament. I sat down the notebook and rested my head in my hand. And that's when Aaron said it. That little statement he'd said so many fucking times that served no purpose other than his own self-aggrandizement. I just wish we all could have brought the same amount of money. Aaron, I told you before, I don't ever want to hear that fucking phrase again, man. You're like a broken record. I mean, what does it matter now? I'm just saying, dude. It would have been easier if I hadn't have brought all the money. My anger rapidly gained momentum. If the listener will remember, chapters and chapters ago, all the way back to a mountainside in Switzerland after Wilson the drug dealer had dropped the three of us off, this was the first time of so many that Aaron had spoken those words. It was the time he claimed that it was, quote, his money, and essentially made me and Corey feel like a couple of assholes who were bumming off of him or something. I had told him, Aaron, I promise you, throughout the course of this trip, I will make more money than you brought. He had laughed in my face and continued to go on about how he had, quote, broke his back to get that money, when in fact he was just doing the same job he had been doing for years, with the exception of a couple evenings here and there of overtime. I had drastically altered my lifestyle to create our website, sold almost all of my worldly possessions, and would be returning to a world of bills with no money left whatsoever. It had made me so angry that he'd been so arrogant about it that I actually started keeping track of the money I made from that point forward. Meticulously. Tediously. Every single fucking cent. I didn't say shit about it, though. I personally wouldn't have cared if I brought more money than he had. Money wasn't and isn't what defines my life. But he had been so fucking obnoxious and arrogant about it that I was set to prove him wrong if he brought it up again. And so, while he sat and video chatted Looktal, or sat around watching Steven Seagal movies on his laptop, or laid down on the beach for hours on end, I worked. While he lounged, I labored. When he and Corey went out to see the sights in Bangkok, I worked on freelance jobs. While he sat and whittled sticks in the nature preserve, Corey and I took buses into town and busted our asses for hours and hours every day to make a measly 15 to 30 euros. At some point around the time we had made it to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, I calculated that I had officially brought more money to the table than Aaron had. Now, to be completely honest with myself, as well as the listener, I felt downright tyrannically jubilant about it. But I didn't say a single word to Aaron. I just didn't mention it. To me, it was not a matter worth arguing over without provocation. So why, you're asking yourself, did I take the time to carefully record all of this information? For one, I honestly wanted to know how much money I would end up making from the different things I was doing, music, design, etc., for future trip planning. This was, I swear, the main reason I kept track of everything. But yes, also because I knew at some point Aaron would bring it up and throw it in my face again. It was his favorite arguing point, and he had consistently and spitefully used it to put me down over and over again. Given, at some point he had laid off for a while and didn't bring it up much when we were getting along. But I knew his ego would rear its ugly head again at some point, and now here it was. I just wish we all could have brought the same amount of money. I still attempted to avoid the conversation by mentioning that it would solve nothing, but he continued. It just doesn't seem fair that I'd bring all this money and you guys didn't even try to get a job before we left. Aaron, I was too busy not only building us a website and playing shows for money, but also planning every single facet of this trip myself, since you guys were pretty much worthless in that aspect. I mean, you wouldn't feel the same if you'd put in more money than me, if it was the other way around. Finally, after hearing enough, I pulled out my trump card. Actually, Aaron, I have put in more money than you. I told you that I would, and I did. A little under a month ago, I surpassed what you brought overall. And no, it actually doesn't bother me that I've put in more money than you. Yeah, whatever. You haven't made more money than I brought. There's no way. Well, I cleared my throat as I proudly pulled out my journal and flipped to the pages upon which I'd been writing everything down. You'll see here, that's all the money Corey and I made busking in Europe. There's all the money that's come in from the website. His gaze turned to serious concern as he saw all of my detailed financial notes. I continued. There's all the graphic design money I've brought in, and there's the money I brought with me when we left. If you'll see here, this number, I pointed to the total sum of all my earnings, this number is higher than that number. That number is the amount that you brought with you. Now, you haven't, as far as I know, made any money since we left, have you? While I was working and you were sitting around? I would have given away all the remaining money we had to somehow capture the look of astonishment, anger, and frustration on his face. It was as if his worst fears had come to fruition. His face instantly turned beet red. You seriously took all the time to write that down? You bet your fucking ass I did after you rubbed it in my face in Europe over and over again. But really, honestly, I don't mind that I've put in more money than you, dude. I won't ever rub it in your face. Well, other than right now, because I'll be honest, I'm really enjoying this. That's bullshit, dude. It's not like you actually made money from donations. That's all of our money. Ask yourself, how many of these donations have come from one of your friends or family members? None. Also, ask yourself how many hours or even minutes you've spent building or maintaining the website that brought in the donations in the first place. Zero. Yeah, well, it's not like you really did anything, though. I worked my ass off for my money. That was it. After all he had said to me throughout this journey that had busted my spirit, hurt my pride, or angered me, this was the straw that broke the camel's back. The fact that he trivialized all the work I had done while he was sitting around. The fact that he hadn't really done any different work than he'd always done since he'd been working with his father, but somehow acted like he'd worked like a slave during the 3 months before we left. I had worked much too hard while he sat around during the trip to listen to that kind of shit. I just want to punch you in the goddamn face right now. You should just go ahead and shut your fucking mouth. He grinned and laughed. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's right. About this time, Ashley and Sarah returned to view and walked towards the Jeep, unaware of the argument that was taking place. I looked back at Aaron. You should shut up, right now, before I clock you upside your ignorant, arrogant head. Well, maybe you should just do it then, huh? Maybe I fucking will. Yeah, okay. I wanted to. My fists were clenched and my face was probably just as red as his. I wanted nothing more than to bury my knuckles right square on his nose with every ounce of force I could muster. Two things stopped me from doing so. One, Aaron would kick my ass. I try my best to be an honest person, and honestly, he would probably annihilate me in a fight. I'm not a large person, nor am I a fighter. I would have punched him, and he probably would have made me his bitch. Two, I had already decided in a fraction of a second after his infuriating statement that I was finally done with him. That was it. No more. Thus, neither getting my ass kicked nor continuing to argue with him would be worth it. Ashley and Sarah very quietly sat down and continued their own conversation as if World War III was not about to start in the seats behind them. Aaron and I quickly ended our verbal jousting match and each stared out our own window in anger and frustration. That night we stayed at what would end up being my favorite campsite of the whole road trip. It was in a cove near Albany, Western Australia, where the Southern Ocean crashed upon rocky shores and a cold wind swept the landscape. It made me think of Arctic landscapes, and I thought of the explorers I loved reading so much about. Peary, Mawson, Scott, Anmundsen, fearless wanderers of the southern and northern extremities of the world. After we set up our big tent amidst a shanty town of shacks and other campers like ourselves, I sat on a big rock overlooking the sea. The ocean was violent there, waves crashing on the rocks with the sound of thunder, spray emitting from the collision as if a meteor had struck the water's surface. The foamy water would wash up across the rocks and snake its way back, to be recycled into the chaos once more. I looked at nature's might and pondered my own situation. Aaron and I's relationship seemed similar in a way, vehemently clashing against each other with dramatic grandeur, bickering back and forth as we made our way through the obstacles along our path. There would be a pause or a moment of serenity where the bickering stopped and the water hung in the balance for a moment. Then it would slip backwards slowly where it was doomed to repeat the process all over again. This is it, I thought, staying true to my decision earlier in the day. Why keep this going? It will never change. I walked back to the tent and asked Aaron to step outside with me for a moment. It was the first time we'd even acknowledged each other since the explosive argument hours earlier. We both had a seat in the back of the Jeep where we could have some conversational privacy from Ash and Sarah, who had been awkwardly avoiding even acknowledging our battle. Man, I've been thinking a lot about this all day, I opened. We're just two totally different people. I don't hate you or anything. I want you to know that. We're just different. We have personalities that clash, and I don't think we'll ever truly find a way to get along. I don't really know how else to lead up to this, so I'm just going to say it. I've decided that after we leave Ryan's in Kalgoorlie, I'm going to go on alone. End of chapter 27. Chapter 28, Kangaroo Beach. Albany, Australia to Kalgoorlie, Australia. Travel works best when you're forced to come to terms with the place you're in. Paul Theroux. October 24th. But what would I do? Aaron's face went from anger to concern very quickly. Well, we'll have a week with Ryan in Kalgoorlie. That should give you plenty of time to figure out what you want to do. You have a little more money than I do right now, but I'll split what I've earned from the website 50-50 with you, and then we'll just go our separate ways. Wow, you've really put a lot of thought into this. You must really want to get rid of me. He seemed genuinely distraught. Man, I'm not going to turn this into another argument. We're just completely different people. You do a lot of things that drive me crazy, and I'm sure I do the same to you. We just can't get along. I'd rather enjoy the last part of this trip than spend it arguing with you over and over. I wouldn't know what to do. Well, you'll have time to figure that out. In Kalgoorlie, you can research everything you need to. I'll give you all my notes for New Zealand, too. There's nothing I can do to make this better? To keep you from doing this? It felt like I was going through a breakup or something, and in a way, I guess I kind of was. Aaron, we're just different people, I repeated. I'll never ask you to change, because you are who you are, and I'm sure there's millions of people in this world who'd get along great with you. Unfortunately, I'm not one of those people. Like, what do I do that makes you so angry? I'm not going to get into specifics, man. It's not important. They're just quirks you have that I just can't stand, that's it. Like, what, though, specifically? Maybe it's something I could work on to try to help us get along better. I don't think it's a good idea for us to split up. I mean, we don't have much longer to go. There are just things, man, that irk me. Little things that aren't even worth mentioning, but we're just different. That's all it is. No need to hurt anyone's feelings more than we've already done. Let's just call it what it is and move forward. I've put a lot of thought into this, and I think it's what's best for both of us to be happy. I really don't know what I'll do, though. That aspect really did worry me. Given his astronomically terrible sense of direction and understanding of certain things, there was a decent likelihood he wouldn't make it very far without accidentally walking into a volcano or something. I had babysat long enough, though. If he didn't appreciate everything I did, I wasn't going to humor his ignorance by sticking around to help him anymore. Yes, I realize I'm feeding into the breakup theme by sounding like an underappreciated housewife with that last statement. I'm sorry, man. You'll have plenty of time to figure that stuff out. I don't see why we can't work all this out. I mean, what is it I do that makes you so mad? He persisted. Aaron, seriously, I'm not going to do this, man. It's only going to hurt feelings and it will accomplish nothing. Specifically, though, I want to know what I'm doing to piss you off. Oh, my God, dude. I think you can at least tell me. You really want to know? Yeah, I do. Okay, fine. You go to sleep at fucking 8 p.m. and wake up at dawn for no reason like an 80-year-old man. You're constantly nagging me over every single thing I do like you're my mom, but then you turn around and tell me off every time I want to spend even the tiniest bit of money. And that's while I know for a fact you have at least $2,000 in a box at home that you left for when you get back, even though you have no fucking bills because you live with mommy and daddy at 26 years old. I don't have $2,000 at home, he quickly retorted. He was lying. Before we'd left, he'd told me and Corey how he had sold a couple more of his possessions last minute, gaining an extra $3,000. He put $1,000 into the trip fund and said we wouldn't need the rest of it anyway, so he was leaving it at home. Later in the trip, when we realized the trip fund wasn't going to make it through, he denied that this had even taken place, as if Corey and I had both happened to completely imagine the same conversation out of thin air, and went on to claim that he had owed his parents money and given the money to them. Yes, you do have $2,000 sitting at home. You sit and do nothing while you watch me slave my fucking ass off on the computer or bus. You bitch and moan about money all the time, but you wouldn't get off your ass and find a job in Italy to make anymore. You rub it in my face about that goddamn jacket I bought. Yeah, I fucked up, but I let you go shopping by yourself one time, and you come back with a woman's jean jacket. Huh? A woman's? Yes, a woman's. Do you want me to go on about all the shit you do? No, I think that's enough. This isn't a woman's jacket, though. Yes, dude. Yes, it is. I didn't have the heart to tell you. He was silent for a moment. Well, do you want me to tell you all the stuff that you do that drives me crazy? No. Oh, well, I don't really know what to say then. I sat there catching my breath. Two emotions hit me concurrently. The first was guilt. I had just said some really hurtful, mean things to him. I realized that, and I actually felt terrible and regretful about it almost immediately. I could tell I had really hurt his feelings. Which is why the second emotion is the one that surprised me. Relief. It felt incredible to get all of that off my chest. I had bottled most of it up for months, letting it fester and build up inside me. We were both silent for a long time while we each thought about what to say or do next. I was debating whether I should apologize to Aaron. I felt awful for having gone on a tirade against him, even if he'd explicitly and repeatedly asked for it, quite literally. Aaron broke the silence. Do you think maybe a lot of this has to do with the fact that we haven't had any cigarettes in like 4 days? I thought for a moment, and then let out a sigh and laughed to myself quietly. Aaron, yes, I think probably 90% of it could be that. I hadn't even thought of that as the reason I wasn't able to brush off our differences lately. I feel like if we smoked a cigarette right now, we would probably be perfectly fine. We both laughed at that, the first genuinely shared moment of humor we'd had in as long as I could remember. Yeah, I think you're probably right. Should we just say fuck it and buy a bag of tobacco tomorrow? I don't think it's worth killing each other over. Fuck it. We only have a month or so left. Might as well try to enjoy it. Does that mean you're not leaving me then? I wasn't. Just like that, in the matter of about 5 minutes, between my explosion of anger and then the subsequent realization that nicotine withdrawal was probably causing a lot of our current problems, I changed my mind. That night I slept like a baby. A gigantic weight had lifted off of my shoulders. I later apologized to Aaron for everything I'd said that night. I still feel terrible about it, even now. One of those moments I would go back and change if given the chance, but alas, cannot. The next day we bought one pack of cigarettes for $22, broke one of them apart and rolled it into two smaller cigarettes, and then smoked them. I felt like a completely different person. Damn you, tobacco, and your evil bullshit mind games. Nicotine addiction is one crooked, nasty bitch. It was obviously stupid in retrospect that we made such a decision while the lingering shadow of financial ruin lay just ahead. Here we were, afraid to spend $6 on food, but willing to pay $22 for 20 cigarettes. I often think that if we had just waited a few more days, our irritability surely would have rescinded. We'd just taken the easy excuse to cave in and start smoking again. That was the last time we attempted to quit smoking during our travels together. I couldn't even begin to count how many attempts there were total. There were the very first attempts before we'd even left home, when I'd bought probably 6 different packs of nicotine patches, only to start smoking again as soon as the steps were finished. Then there was our first flight to Spain. We had resolved to smoke the 3 or 4 cigarettes we had left and call it quits once we arrived in Europe, but Blake had bought us each a new pack right before he and Allie dropped us off at the airport. There were separate attempts in Germany, Switzerland, Italy, multiple times there. 2 or 3 attempts in Thailand, another one in Malaysia. I really don't know how many total. I think back to picking up cigarette butts from the ground at bus stations in Italy. When I'm diagnosed with lung cancer, which is surely inevitable given all the strange things I did to my respiratory system during that period of my life, I'll reminisce back on that time and think, yep, that's where I got it. No doubts there. Our little wagon train now rolled forth through Oz with new spirit. We finally saw our first group of kangaroos, a bunch of them actually, and before we knew it, they became like deer back home in Ohio. We'd see them everywhere. We avoided hitting them on the road constantly. We made it to Esperance, where we photographed kangaroos lounging about on the beach. There were even some with little joeys in their pouch. I sipped my morning instant coffee with my rolled cigarette and watched the roos hop around on the beach as the calm ocean lapped waves behind them. I had expected to spend a full day there at least, since this had actually been the principal destination of our road trip. Instead, the tent was packed up and we were quickly on our way after being hassled by a park ranger and forced to hand over the money for our camping spot. Our finances were really taking a hit between food, gas, camping, and now cigarettes again. That afternoon, we stopped at a cafe for Wi-Fi, where I did a little bit of design work and pitched some new clients. I also sent Ryan a message to let him know of our impending arrival, and another to Blake asking for an update on whether or not he'd be able to pick us up in L.A. He said they were still trying to figure things out, but he would let me know soon if it would be possible. All of our couch surfing requests for New Zealand had been denied, which meant the financial situation was looking even more grim. We kept on driving and ended up in Kalgoorlie sometime that evening. We hung out at the local library to steal some more Wi-Fi, and I attempted to contact Ryan. I hadn't had any response from him, so I gave him Sarah's number to reach us, and we opted to find a campsite for the night. Ryan had offered a room for Ash and Sarah in an earlier message, but they said they'd be moving forward in the morning to make good time towards the farm they were set to start work on. We spent the evening cooking dinner together and sharing laughs. We swapped stories and joked about our cultural differences. We'd had quite a lot of language barriers, which was surprising considering we all spoke the same language. There were different terms for certain items, which constantly led to confusion. One time Sarah was searching through the food bin asking if we had any pudding. I was confused. Pudding? Yeah, I'm pretty sure I haven't seen any fucking pudding in there. When the hell did we buy pudding? I thought we'd bought some cakes earlier, she replied. Yeah, we got cakes. I never saw any pudding. Oh, in the UK, pudding is just what you would call dessert. Chips are crisps. Fries are chips. Trucks are lorries. Being drunk is pissed. Everything is proper. I'm about to give you a proper beating. I was proper pissed. Things got really crazy when they threw Cockney rhyming slang into the picture. Apples and pears, stairs, dog and bone, phone, bread and honey, money, trouble and strife, wife, Tom Tit, shit, raspberry tart, fart. The next morning they treated us to a proper English breakfast of beans on toast with cheese. We all stood around the Jeep we'd lived in for the past week or two and snapped a picture together. I'd really grown fond of the pair. I'd liked them from the start, but had really gotten to know them during our time together. Ryan had finally gotten back in touch with us and was set to pick us up from the campground shortly. In the meantime, Ash and Sarah were packed and ready to be on their way back east. We had a round of hugs and then said goodbye to our new friends as we sat our bags on the curb. Once again, as had been consistent throughout our journey, groups of people had come and gone. New friends, hosts, rides, whatever they may have been each time. That was the constant. They were only there for a short period of time, and then it was back to just Aaron and me. Even Corey, in the grand scale of things, had only been with us for 2 short months before he'd had enough of vagabond life. For better or worse, Aaron and I were stuck together until our feet hit American soil. The good news was that we had been getting along famously after reintroducing nicotine into our bloodstream. I wondered if it would continue to last, but at the same time made up my mind that either way I would go ahead and stick it out. We were in the home stretch. So far we hadn't been stuck living under bridges and whatnot, as we'd had to do in Europe. I knew New Zealand was going to hold untold misadventures in terms of this. There was no denying that, given our dismal bankroll. I just hoped we'd be able to make it the rest of the way through Oz under roofs instead of bridges. End of chapter 28. Chapter 29. Outback. Kalgoorlie, Australia. I found myself alienated from the group, watching all of them loudly get drunk, doing things so similar to former pastimes of my own, drinking games, chugging liquor, etc. It all seems so pointless, ridiculous, really. I don't quite know how to word it. Tonight I went with Ryan to a barbecue dinner at his friend's house, and there I enjoyed intelligent and insightful conversation. We all sat around drinking casually and conversing with one another. Is the latter not the more fruitful and valuable of the two experiences? Journal entry, November 2nd, 2013. October 28th. It felt fantastic to finally see Ryan. He was the first familiar face I'd seen in months, and someone I knew I would connect with much more than my current traveling companion. We generally seemed to share the same ideals on life in general, from religion to science to environmental concerns and politics. The first thing he asked was what the hell happened to Corey. Of course, he already knew most of it was due to Katie cajoling him into returning early. When I explained the rest of the story about her cheating on him and the pregnancy, etc., he was flabbergasted. Oh my God, what the hell is he doing? Well, see, I really can't answer that question because I have no fucking clue. I introduced him to Aaron as we loaded our things into his truck, and then we all hopped in to head towards his house. So you guys are staying for about a week then? He asked. Yeah, that's the game plan. We'll take a train back to Perth the day before our flight. Right on. I've got some pretty fun stuff planned. I figure we can head in and do some camping in the outback one night. You guys gotta see the stars out there for sure. And if you want, we can go check out some bars and stuff. Camping sounds awesome, but we don't really have the cash flow to go to any bars or anything. Ah, man, no worries there. I got you guys. Just let me show you a good time, yeah? Shit, we were already charity cases from all the donations we received through our website. Fuck it, all right. Thanks, man. I mean, that'll be a lot of fun. We arrived at his house after a short drive, and he gave us a rundown of the place. He has a small store just up the street there if you need to buy ciggies or food or anything. I have a dog I'm watching for a year or two for a friend who's out traveling. His name's Mango. If you guys could take him on a walk to the park a couple streets over about once a day, that would be great. He's an Australian shepherd and they have a lot of energy to burn off. Yeah, definitely, man. That's no problem at all. Other than that, just chill, guys. Make yourselves at home and do whatever. It was satisfyingly relaxing at Ryan's. I walked in to see an Ohio license plate on the wall and several CD cases of familiar favorite bands. I immediately felt at home. I absolutely loved Mango. That dog was probably the smartest pup I've ever met, and impressively well-behaved, too. I spent a large portion of my days throwing sticks for him in the backyard, and Aaron and I would take him down to the park once a day or more. Our only negative experience came when I took Mango with me to the local store to buy some cigarettes one day. There was a small group of Aboriginals who loitered outside of the store every day. When I say loitered, I mean they would sit in a circle in the middle of the fucking parking lot, where people would have to swerve to avoid hitting them. A lot of the Aboriginals I saw in Oz seemed pretty unhappy and poverty-stricken. It reminded me of the sad story of the American West, millions of natives forced from their homes and stripped of their pride and traditions. It is, in my opinion, the single most devastating and terrible action our government has made in all of United States history, and I think every single school kid should be taught about it. But that isn't the way it is, of course. We're taught about Thanksgiving, which tribes lived where, but I don't seem to remember any teachers writing Massacre at Wounded Knee on the chalkboard. I don't recall a lecture to pupils about stripping natives of their weapons and herding them into reservations where they were told they'd be given food and money, only to refuse to provide either. I don't remember my teacher telling me that once that happened, the natives had no choice but to leave the reserve and go hunting to prevent their families from starving. Maybe my memory is escaping me of the part where Mrs. 10th grade teacher told me about how we used this as a reason to send cavalry troops into the villages and start murdering all of their women and children because they had, quote, broken the treaty by leaving the reservation, even though our government had left them no choice. I had to research on my own to learn about how we had tomahawked infants and toddlers, shot women in the back as they'd ran away, and took millions of acres of land by trickery, deceit, or outright force. Some people will rebut that Native Americans killed plenty of our women and children as well. Well, I say two things. One, they were mostly taught barbarity by the Europeans. Scalping, for example, was not native to the Americas before the arrival of white people. Two, I'd probably do some fucked up things as well if you came into my house, killed my family, and then told me that my house was yours. Once you go west and see what we've done to the Native Americans, it really hits home. What our government did to those proud people was despicable, and I'll gladly debate angrily with anyone who states otherwise. I hadn't researched it, but I imagined the story of the Australian Aboriginal was similar to the American Indian. I talked to a few who seemed nice enough, but they were just that, a few. Most were noticeably angry towards us. Mango and I were walking out of the store one day when one of them motioned to me. Hey, man, give me a cigarette. Sure, man, no worries. It's, just tobacco and papers, though, so you'll have to roll one. Is that all right? Yeah, well, fuck you, then. What? I'm saying you can have one, you just have to roll it. How about you fuck off, mate? Well, all right, then. I kept Mango on a tight leash as he tried to go near them to be petted. No, Mango. Those men are assholes. They don't deserve your puppy cuddles. A few days into our stay, Ryan took us into the outback to go camping. We had a cooler full of kangaroo steaks and plenty of beer to get us through the night. We had driven through the outback a little bit on our road trip with Ash and Sarah, but not like this. Now we were way out there, with nothing around for miles and miles in any direction. We drove for hours on red dirt roads without seeing anything. It was absolute silence and tranquility. We set up lawn chairs on a small hill overlooking a dry lake bed to watch the sunset. It was one of the most captivating scenes I saw during our entire journey around the world. The lake bed was skirted by a row of skinny trees, which were silhouetted as the sun started to dip over the horizon. Everything seemed to be different shades of red, orange, or brown. Those are the only colors which exist in the outback, to my knowledge, besides a rare splash of green here or there. The sun was huge, bigger than I'd seen it anywhere else in the world. It looked like a neighboring planet, peeking over the trees onto the lake bed as we bade it goodbye from our lawn chairs. Ryan set up a camera behind us and set the timer for a picture. that was arguably the best photo of the whole trip. A silhouette of three guys in lawn chairs, beers in hand, with the Australian sun setting over the outback. Streams of light filter past our outlined figures and stretch towards the camera lens. You can actually feel the tranquility in the photo. We started a fire and cooked our roux steaks. They were a little tough, but the flavor was excellent. Afterwards, we drove a few hundred yards away from the campsite and lay down on the sand to watch the stars. I had only seen stars like this one other time in my life, in Utah just outside of Vernal. I had never seen so many stars before when I stood outside of the van 2 years prior with Corey, my brother Rob, and our friend Wes. Now in Oz, I saw not quite as many stars, but the largest night sky I could have imagined. It felt as if we were in a giant snow globe. With nothing but flatness all around us and no light pollution for an easy 100 miles in any direction, you could see stars in a giant half sphere all around you. It was the first time in my life I can recall looking straight forward and seeing a sky full of stars. It was as if I was standing on a huge sand-covered frisbee in the middle of space and looking out over its edge. You could actually see the Milky Way flow hazily over part of the night sky. As always happens when a group of people stare at the night sky like this, philosophical thoughts and discussion emerge. I'm sure as ancient humans lay on the ground looking upwards, their conversation wasn't too different from our own today. Just as us, they likely marveled at the mysterious and infinite darkness, gazed at the stars, and pondered life's infinite questions. Where did we come from? Why are we here? Is there anyone else out there? Ryan and I discussed at length our thoughts on the possibilities of other life, science, and the vastness of space, what we thought our species' demise may arise from, and finally, of course, religion. Aaron, during all of this, had remained mostly silent, his Catholic school's negligence once again punishing him, even years after his graduation. He didn't know, or at least didn't convey a knowledge of, a lot of the topics we discussed. I legitimately am curious what he was taught about those subjects. Ryan started going on a tangent. I just don't know how anyone could believe all that shit. You would have to essentially ignore all of man's discoveries over the last fucking century and ignore written history altogether to believe in any man-made religion. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous, I commented, wondering what Aaron was thinking next to me. He didn't say anything. The conversation went on, and I tried to think of a way to tell Ryan to abort for Aaron's sake, but the more I thought about it, maybe he should hear all this stuff. The poor guy had been raised his whole life to think it was shameful to masturbate, that red meat and salt were good for him, and thought God knows what, no pun intended, about the origins of life or the universe. Not that there's anything wrong with believing what you want about the origin of life or the universe, but in my own admittedly undereducated opinion, I think it's good to question things and learn as much as possible about a given subject before forming an opinion you base your life and core beliefs around. If Aaron had an opinion on anything Ryan and I were discussing, he kept it to himself. The next day, after returning home, Ryan and I made a trip to the grocery store while Aaron stayed at the house to video chat with Looktal. The second we hopped in the truck was the first chance I'd had to talk to Ryan alone. Hey man, just to let you know, Aaron's like, pretty religious. His jaw dropped. Oh no, but all that stuff I said. I started laughing. Yeah, I was trying to think of a way to signal you last night, but there was just no chance. Oh, I'm such a fucking asshole. Oh, man, I feel terrible now. Don't worry about it, man. Corey and I have probably put him through the ringer with that stuff, and maybe he needs to hear it about certain things. I don't think he's ever been presented with the other side of that discussion. We left it at that, and the topic wasn't brought up again. As much as I seem to be on the warpath here, I didn't bring it up much to Aaron, really. I casually prodded at times to learn his beliefs on some topics out of sheer curiosity, but I didn't lay into him or anything that I can recall. His beliefs were just that, his. He didn't have any hateful beliefs towards any group of people, and those are my only real beefs with religion. Other than that, people can believe whatever they want, and they may very well be better off for it. I wasn't able to get much graphic design work done while I was in Kalgoorlie. It wasn't for a lack of time, there was plenty of that. I just didn't have any work coming in. I spent some time pitching jobs and planning the next stages of the trip instead. I contacted Bella and Naomi, the two Aussie girls we had met at Hostel Happy Days Roma, and asked if we could stay with either of them for a night before heading to the airport in a couple of days. They were kind of weird about it. Both seemed somewhat hesitant to offer a bed or couch, but eventually Bella told us we could pitch our sleeping bags in our backyard. This was more than enough for us anyway, so we happily accepted. She was planning to pick us up from the train station when we made it back to Perth. As for New Zealand, things weren't looking great. A few invoices had been paid by the time I arrived in Kalgoorlie, but they didn't improve our situation by much. We booked a flight from Auckland to Christchurch for about $300. That, coupled with the $167 train ride back to Perth, left us with very little money to make it through our 2 weeks there. But the flight seemed cheaper than trying to make our way to the southern coast of the North Island, hopping a boat over, and then making our way to Christchurch and Tekapo. That was where my design client Abby had told us to visit, among others. We went out with Ryan on several occasions, once to the bar and a couple of other times to parties. Again, I felt alienated around my peers when we visited the bars. I hadn't drank enough beer to get drunk since sometime around Bangkok. I felt distant and different when people were getting hammered around me now. I had a great time at parties where I could actually sit and converse with people, though. This was something that has stuck with me since returning home. Gone are the days when I enjoyed crowded bars, screaming over the music, and waiting 30 minutes to be served a drink. I'd much rather sit and drink while chatting or joking around with friends, new or old. Aaron didn't join Ryan and I for the last get-together during our stay in Kalgoorlie. Instead, he again stayed at Ryan's to video chat with Luk Tao back in Bangkok. Things had seemed to get pretty serious between the two of them, despite only having met for a total of about 4 hours in person. Aaron hadn't been with very many women before, and I suspected he was quickly falling for her, despite a few things that would have made most people a bit hesitant. He seemed to be happy when he was talking to her, so I suppose that was all that really mattered. We didn't talk very much about it, other than when he had asked if he could take a bus back to Bangkok from Penang, totaling something like 18 hours each way, to stay with her for 2 nights, which would have cost us a few $100. I'd told him, "Aaron, if you wanted to pay to have sex with a Thai girl, you could have done it for $30 while we were there." Anyway, back to Australia. When I got home from the party with Ryan that night, he was acting all depressed and moping around, so I asked him if everything was okay. Luk Tao told me she doesn't want to talk to me anymore. Oh, man. How'd that come about? I don't know. She just said it wouldn't work out between us right now and stuff. She didn't really tell me why. She just said that and then logged off of Skype. Damn, dude. That sucks. Do you think there's like another guy or something? Well, she has a boyfriend, but she's supposed to break up with him. Boom. Red flag. Man, do you think she decided to stay with him? I don't know, man. She wouldn't really tell me anything. I could tell he was deeply hurt. We shared a couple cigarettes and I imparted my probably worthless advice on dating. I could tell, as I mentioned earlier, that he was inexperienced in that area. It wasn't for lack of appeal, I'll say that. A lot of girls back home swooned over that dude, but he did nothing about it. He just genuinely wasn't interested in dating or sleeping with any of them. I don't think he's gay, so don't get any misconceptions there. I think, rather, that he just wasn't looking for anything other than a potential marriage. I'm not saying he should go out and have sex with every girl he meets, either, but I also think it's healthy for anyone, male or female, to play the field a bit as a young adult. Otherwise, this happens. You fall in love with the first girl you meet and are left with no experience how to handle a relationship or meet the needs of a significant other. You'll be left essentially clueless when certain problems arise that would be pretty straightforward for anyone who's got some dating experience. a perfect example being the fact that Looktow still had a boyfriend while having been talking to Aaron for over a month by then. The problem that Aaron was having reminded me of problems I'd had in junior high or high school. I went to sleep feeling sorry for the poor guy. The next day, though, he was chipper and happy again. I noticed him chatting with Looktow. I thought she broke it off. What happened there? No, we're good now. She messaged me this morning and said she didn't mean any of that stuff she said last night. Oh. Well, awesome, man. Good for you. I held my tongue and cringed. Obviously, she tried to work it out with the boyfriend and it didn't pan out, so she came back to Aaron with some lame excuse and he'd eaten it right up. Any person who would do that kind of stuff definitely isn't worth dating. In my experience, if someone is wishy-washy about being with you, they aren't worth the trouble. If a girl were to tell me that she was thinking about breaking it off with her boyfriend for me and went back and forth a bit, I'd be done with her. In fact, I wouldn't enter a relationship with someone who has a boyfriend to begin with. As the old saying goes, if they do it to another person, they'll do it to you. Second, if I'm with someone on a serious level, they better know for sure they want to be with me. All of this, of course, is idle rambling from a person completely unqualified to impart such advice, given that we all know I hadn't been able to connect with the woman on a serious level since the whole Samantha debacle had led me to where I was at the time, both physically and emotionally. I'd have given anything to be in his position, naive and entirely trusting, falling blindly in love with someone. The curse of the real world had already done its damage to me. I got my first hard lesson on romance early in life, in fact, when I developed a crush on the prettiest girl in third grade, Jillian Jacobs. On the way to school one morning, I penned a particularly romantic letter in which I not only told her that my daddy is a fireman and I like to watch Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, it is probably my favorite show, but also that she was the most prettiest girl in the whole third grade and maybe even the whole wide world. Then I went on, like a blundering fool, to ask if she would be my girlfriend. I carefully folded up my love letter and sealed it with a rather well-drawn heart, if I do say so myself. I handed it to her at lunchtime along with my favorite beanie baby, Freckles the Giraffe. It was a big sacrifice, no doubt, Freckles being the best of my beanie baby collection, but I deemed it as minuscule in comparison to the mountainous achievement of courting the girl of my dreams, the one and only magnificent Jillian Jacobs. After handing her the note and my prized giraffe, I embarrassedly scurried back to my table and awaited to hear from my perfect, stunning, hopefully soon-to-be new girlfriend. But alas, it was not meant to be. After a few short minutes, beautiful Jillian came over and threw Freckles the giraffe at my lap. "I already have this one," she proclaimed before tearing up my letter, throwing it at me like confetti, and then turning around and walking away in a huff. My little heart crunched up like a paper ball. I stuffed Freckles the Giraffe into my pocket and turned my watery eyes towards my Salisbury steak. Third grade Tom learned right then that women could do more damage to a human being than anything else on this earth. I decided right then and there that they did, in fact, have cooties, just like Jeffy Thompson said they did. Although, in all fairness, they were cooties of the soul, rather than cooties on your pee-pee like he'd told me. It turns out you can get those as well, though, if you meet the right girl. I told myself, forget her. No more girls, ever. You'll have more time now to focus on your Super Mario 3 and Lego building skills. Of course, here we are, over a decade later, and I still haven't been able to quell the never-ending search for love. At some point I sold all my Legos, too, so who am I anymore, even? It's not that I didn't trust anyone, as you would expect, but more along the lines that I actually, for lack of better wording, felt broken. As in, my feelings bone was broken. I wanted to feel, but it just didn't happen. It was me, not women, who were the problem. I was fully aware that not everyone was like my ex. Not even close, actually. Hopefully for the sake of humanity. But woe I sit as I wait for the right someone to come along and accept my love notes and my dear friend Freckles the Giraffe. Maybe once she comes along, we can laugh about all this over a Salisbury steak and a carton of chocolate milk. Until then, I'm left to ponder what could have been, from Jillian Jacobs in the third grade to all the failed relationships in between, all the way up to Samantha. One thing I always remind myself when reminiscing